discovering that your favourite uncle that taken you for walks in the park, that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday.
Back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, there's no way of knowing if Israel's destruction of Iran's Damascus embassy last week inspired Ecuador's infamous violation of the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations over the weekend. But the storming of the Mexican embassy in that country and kidnapping of Ecuador's former vice president and asylee, Jorge Glass, certainly reiterates the erosion of international law. Glass, who served in Rafael Correa's administration and was convicted for corruption, says charges against him are politically motivated. He'd been in the embassy since December and was promised safe passage out of the country last week. Mexico's president, Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador, blasted the Noboa administration for the breach, saying the arrest of Glass constitutes an authoritarian act and is, quote, a flagrant violation of international law and sovereignty of Mexico. Joe Emmersberger is a Canadian Ecuadorian engineer, journalist, and co-author with Justin Potter of the book Extraordinary Threat, the U.S. Empire, the Media, and 20 Years of Coup Attempts in Venezuela. Joe's many articles focusing on Western media coverage of the Americas can be found at fair.org, Counterpunch, and Telesur English, among other places. Welcome back to the program, Joe.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, it's my great pleasure. Of course, now, Joe, I saw the video. It was a pretty dramatic evening at the embassy, at the Mexican embassy in Quito. Do you want to describe for our listeners that haven't seen it what went down?
Yeah, police burst in, roughed up the staff of the at the Mexican embassy in Quito, and kidnapped Jorge Glass, dragged him out of the embassy where he had formerly received asylum. And it would have been an illegal act even if he hadn't yet received asylum, but it compounds it, the fact that he had just a day earlier formally received asylum from political asylum from Mexico. So they burst into the this is basically equivalent to the technically an invasion of Mexican soil. Kidnapped Jorge Glass, brought him to a maximum security prison, then I guess brought him to a hospital because he was taken ill, and there was various reports and rumors, but they're keeping it very quiet about his condition. So it was just an egregious violation of international law, pretty unprecedented. You know, even that's been pointed out that even the worst, most brutal dictatorships respected the Vienna Convention and did not invade embassies when people took refuge there. It's incredibly wild move on Noboa's part. Could it have been inspired by similar lawlessness by the U.S.? Of course, has done things like this. They kidnapped diplomats like Alex Saab from Venezuela, who's now back in Venezuela. But they kidnapped him, tortured him, subjected just horrific things that they did to him. Of course, they seized the embassy in Washington, Venezuela's embassy in Washington, on just the most outrageous pretext. And Venezuela did not reciprocate. Senate did not retaliate by seizing the U.S. embassy because that's just not done. I mean, countries have been, with the exception of the United States and its clients, have been pretty good about accepting the sanctity and of embassies. You know, treating them as the sovereign territory of the countries that they belong to, and not violating that. Why Noboa would think he could get away with this? I mean, obviously he thought he could. It seems clear, like, he's officially asked for leave. I just learned this. Noboa has asked for leave from the National Assembly to take leave of absence, basically, from his job as president. It's very weird.
He's taking stress leave all of a sudden? Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, so it's permanent.
It's very weird. I don't know whether they got permission from the United States to do this, although the United States has formally condemned it. In the OAS, it was overwhelming. It was like 29 against. Only Ecuador voted condemning the violation. Only one against Ecuador and one abstention. That's it. So, I mean, they are completely, they made a pariah out of themselves just to basically continue the persecution of political opponent. Jorge Glass has spent 5 years in jail and should never spend a day. If you looked into his the cases against him, it's always been outrageous, and the latest one is even more outrageous. It's possibly even worse than the other cases that they convicted him for, because he's accused of misusing funds. Like, basically, they're saying that certain projects that he oversaw, the building of roads and some park in Manabí province, which was hit by an earthquake, there was reconstruction funds to reconstruct the province and revitalize its economy. And he oversaw some of the projects. And the attorney general, who hates Correa, has been leading the persecution of Correa, of Correa's movement, of which Glass is a key part. She said that some of those projects didn't comply fully with the legislation. And that's the whole basis for this. I mean, it's just such a joke. It's such a petty, flimsy pretext. They're used just on its face. You can see how, if you know the details, you see how flimsy and ridiculous it is. And this is the basis for committing this egregious violation of international law.
Now, Joe, the permanent, you mentioned the OAS, the Organization of American States, the Permanent Council held an emergency meeting, although it doesn't say that here. I'm assuming that's what it is, to deal with two member states going so out of bounds like this. And they wanted to show, as I mentioned, there was a video of this, a pretty dramatic video. They were, the Ecuadorian contingent was trying to stop the video being shown, because it's pretty graphic. And as you say, I mean, when you say police went in, well, these guys, they don't look like police. They might look like police in Mexico. They look like, a shock troop SWAT team, machine guns pointed and at the ready, as you mentioned, vehicles that look more like tanks and everything else. And really, this was looked like a military operation from what I saw. But what I found really interesting, and I've forgotten his name, maybe you can help me, but the Mexican head of mission there the whole time was struggling with these armed
he was
policemen.
Yeah,
he was really upset, and
he was roughed up. He was roughed up. No, he was punched. He was roughed up. He was knocked to the ground. The images that have been going all over the world. It's really, I mean, the incompetence and the stupidity of the Ecuadorian government they're trying to censor this at the OAS. What's the point? I mean, they don't have a leg to stand on. The whole world is seeing these images. They've just drawn attention to what an absolute joke the legal system is in Ecuador, that they would. If they violate the law of a high-profile person like this, they violate his rights, violate international law so egregiously in front of everybody, what do you think they're doing when people aren't as focused? What do you think they've been doing to Glass? Well, how do you think they've been handling his case when people aren't paying attention as much?
You know what I mean? Well, now the head of mission, as you described, this guy is pretty heroic. I'm sure they're singing his praises across the length and breadth of Mexico today. But I mean, he didn't give up, and he fought with these guys through the corridors, out the front door, and into the street, where he was finally smashed on the ground. And somebody that was videoing it, he got up and he said that something to the effect of that they're going to kill this guy, meaning Jorge Glass. Then we hear that Glass has been taken out of prison. Wow. He's either in a coma or he's on a hunger strike or something, but he's been disappeared into the hospital. You don't know what his present situation is, Joe?
Nobody really knows. They've been not allowing him contact with lawyers, with family, with anything. It's just one brazen act of illegality after another, and they're doing this in front of the whole. They chose to do this in a way that spotlights Ecuador's lawlessness in front of the whole world. This has been going on for years. The lawlessness, the abuse of power towards Correa has been going for several years. That is not new. What's new is that they've done it. That they provoked an international incident with another country over this, just an unprecedented violation of international law. Like, I mean, again, the worst dictatorships in Latin America didn't do this. And the Boas government is just so incredibly incompetent and full of itself. I think there may be the fact that Noboa now has asked for a leave of absence. Who knows what that's about? But it seems like they're starting to wake up to the fact that, oh my God, this was a blunder. You know, it seems like it really seems that they're so incompetent they didn't realize that this was not good.
Well, and now the Mexican president AMLO, he's saying, oh, now we're going to take this to the world court now, to the International Court of Justice. he's pretty hot.
Yeah, well, that's in fact, that's good, because what, you know, what people fear, what anyone should fear, is that ordinary Ecuadorians who had nothing to do with this end up paying the price. 75%, according to a pollster I consider reliable, expressed total disagreement with what Noboa did. Only under 25% agree, or there's a small percentage are indifferent to or don't know, whatever. So it's, if I remember the numbers correctly, it's roughly like 20% said he told, like they strongly agree or something. So basically just a small percentage of the population that supports this. The overwhelming percentage of the population is a total disagreement. So it would be really be terrible if Mexico's retaliation involved anything that hurts the population. But what's happened here is basically like an invasion. I mean, they cannot let this slide. They cannot let this slide without consequence. This is an act of aggression.
Clearly, Joe, those people in Ecuador that are disapproving of this action, they haven't read Genevieve Glatzky's article in the New York Times, and it's headed, a diplomatic spat in Ecuador may lift its president's political fortunes. There's a re-election campaign coming up in Ecuador, and Daniel Noboa, his popularity is he's not very popular. She's arguing in this article in the New York Times that under the idea that if he shows some kind of machismo or something like that, he'll get Ecuadorians to vote for him. And what do you think are his chances of that? That's not till next year.
But. Well, no, that's just an idiotic read on the situation. the polls show that Ecuadorians are. I mean, that just shows such contempt for the common sense and intelligence of Ecuadorians. They know that they're not the United States, first of all, and that they can't just go around violating country sovereignty like this. I mean, if you saw a poll, if you made that argument, maybe the United States, a country that can get away with anything, pretty much, right? Even the United States, there are limits to what he can get away with. I mean, that's another discussion. But Ecuador's a small country, and people are not stupid. They recognize that this was illegal, and that this was opening them up to retaliation that nobody wants. I mean, and nobody can afford. I mean, tons of Ecuadorians travel through Mexico because of the economic crises and that. And so they go through Mexico. They could require support from their government, or just not to be treated with hostility in Mexico because they're from Ecuador, and it's the country that violated committed an act of aggression against Mexico. So it's obviously not in the interests of Ecuadorians. Anyone who has family who has traveled through Mexico, or a migrant who could travel through Ecuador, through Mexico, nobody wants retaliation. I mean, that's just common sense. So this is not going to help. This is not going to make Noboa look macho. This makes him look very stupid. And Ecuadorians clearly see that. So anyone who says that this is helping him, this is just an incredibly boneheaded move. It's one thing had he not recognized, they granted him asylum, but he played tough and said, okay, we're not gonna let him leave. We're not gonna give him safe conduct. That's different. I mean, that maybe he could have sold as a macho move or whatever. But to do this is just an act of stupidity. He does not have Ecuador does not have the economic or military muscle to back any of this up. And they're not Israel either. I mean, they're not like a powerhouse, like, or even like a Colombia with all these military bases and a much larger population, who the United States might let get away with more, right? They're just not going to pull this off. He's going to end up having consequences, and so, like I said, going to the International Court of Justice and trying to make the consequences as much as possible. Focus on punishing the government as opposed to the people, to the extent that that's possible. That's what Mexico is going to do, I hope. and I hope it doesn't go. I hope it doesn't go beyond that, because that would hurt innocent people.
Well, of course, the Americans have totally distanced themselves, and they are. condemning this move, as every other country, I think, is. I don't know if anybody's standing with them. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Joe Emmonsberger. Joe is a Canadian, Ecuadorian engineer, journalist, and co-author with Justin Potter of the book Extraordinary Threat, the U.S. Empire, the Media, and 20 Years of Coup Attempts in Venezuela. Joe's writings can be found at fair.org, Counterpunch, and Telesur, among other places. One of those other places, Joe, being your own page up at Substack. And I had it up in front of me. What's it? Help us out here. What's it called again? Just Joe Emmonsberger?
You can find it on just Google Substack Joe Emmonsberger. It's called, the title is Unedited Anti-Imperialism. Yeah. So, but you can just find Substack Joe Emmonsberger. You can find me there.
Okay. So boneheaded Joe. Okay, that's one explanation. But maybe there's something more.
There's no question that the way the United States lets its clients get away with. Well, look at the amount of persecution and just that Ecuador has gotten, Ecuador's right-wing government since 2017 have gotten away with, and still received good press, still received U.S. support. So there's no question. It's like the spoiled child who knows that the parents are going to let them get away with stuff, but then the spoiled child can sometimes go too far and not realize that, no, actually, mommy and daddy don't want you to do that.
Yeah.
I think that might be kind of the situation here. I think he might have misinterpreted how far the U.S. would go to support him. Maybe the behind their scenes they told him, hey, well, you know, we'll condemn him in public, but you know, don't worry about it. I frankly doubt that though. This was so stupid.
What's behind the animus here? I mean, Correa has been out of power for a long time. Why would Noboa still be? He's safe and secure for at least another year. Why does he care? Why would he even step up to do something like this?
Well, because the persecution of the Correa's movement is very important to every right-wing politician in Ecuador. Remember, Correa can't run, but his block is now has its own party. It's the largest block in the national. It's not the majority, but it's the largest by far in the National Assembly. They're trying to impeach the Attorney General, who's been going after them all these years. They're a real thorn in the side still of the right wing, and they came close to winning the presidential election. I mean, they got edged out, for a lot of basically because Correa can't run himself. He's got to appoint people to run and like people he endorses to run himself. And that's never the political trap capital does never transfer 100% from one person to another, right? It's not the same as Correa running as having, you know, him picking somebody and say, you'll pick her, right? It's never quite the same. And plus, it also, I mean, he does not have a good record of the people he picks sometimes, like Moreno.
Yeah,
he picks,
I'll say.
You know, yeah. So that also, I think, hurts them. I also think hurts them when they have to run other people, right? There's some room for doubt, you know. Anyways, but still, they came close. They got 48% of the eligible votes, of the valid votes, and they're the largest bloc in the National Assembly. So they're a force to be reckoned with, and they're fighting to hold the government accountable, to hold this attorney general who's been the spearheading the persecution accountable. And so it's very much in the interest of the right wing. They want to crush them and intimidate them and show them that, look, you guys can't, you know, we're not going to let you claim asylum anymore. If we come after you, that you can just run to an embassy. Because I think that was partly of the thinking, the showing that they don't, you know, they're not gonna, you know, they're gonna play tough. It's persecution, it's intimidation. But I honestly think they overstepped. I think this was really a boneheaded move where I don't think they counted on it playing out like this. Again, the fact that Noboa is now taking a leave of absence, that looks really weird.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
Well, the last time we talked, Joe, it was during the run-up to the election, if memory serves, in the autumn last year. There was people being killed, political figures being killed. A few weeks ago, Brigitte mm-hmm. Garcia, yes. Yes. Mayor of San Vicente, and a left-winger, not with the Correas, but the Citizen Revolution.
No, she was. Yes.
What was the story with Brigitte?
Yeah, she's a Correas. The RC5, the Revolución Ciudadana, that party, that's the Correas party. Yeah, she's the youngest mayor, elected mayor in the last round of elections. It is very sad. Yeah, there's just been a wave. Like Ecuador's homicide rate over the past 7 years since the Under Correa, it dropped to the lowest it had been in decades, dramatically dropped. And now, since he left office, under these right-wing governments, it's gone in exactly the opposite direction. Now it's higher than it's ever been, ever. In record, like in at least 60, 70 years. I don't think it's, I don't you ever find data that shows it being this high, because, you know, the data that I see goes back all the way to 1980. Traditionally, Ecuador is not a high crime, before in the 1970s, 60s, you know, it was not a high crime country. It had right-wing governments, but back then, you know, maybe because the drug trade wasn't as big a deal, it didn't have the kind of money and ability to move money all over the globe. It wasn't as advanced for a lot of reasons. Maybe it wasn't, even with right-wing governments, you didn't have the explosion in crime. But starting in 1980, there was just a continuous increase of crime whenever there's been a right-wing government. And Correa's government, for 10 years, they did a tremendous job of basically solving the homicide rate. I mean, the violent crime problem, it went to its lowest level in decades. And now the homicide rate is the most dangerous in Latin America.
Well, the latest thing I'm reading, though, the police are saying they don't know why Brigitte was killed. Is there an indication that this is a political murder or just one of the many that you're citing?
I haven't looked into it as closely. You know, the events happen fast. They can, you know, again, when you have such a high crime, so many people being assassinated or murdered, just but, you know, with the political figures like this, it's in a young political figure. Yeah, you have to suspect this was politically motivated for sure. But, you know, I mean, there's been no relief in the violence. That's, I think, another reason is that the right's been managed to cling to power to just barely keep the Correas out. But if they got back in, there's going to be a reckoning. And I think that's part of the desperation to keep them out. And to, you know, go for broke and, you know, try to squash them. But it hasn't worked all these years. I mean, they've kept them out of the presidency, but they have not succeeded in destroying the movement. So this seems to have been like an attempt to raise the game, to raise the stakes and you know, really increase the persecution and try to keep them out. But I think this is a bad, bad blunder.
Well, Noboa now, he's extended the state of emergency in the country. It's been under that condition for months
yeah,
now.
Yeah, that's kind of old news. That under Lasso, they had a state of emergency. The country's in a state of emergency permanently because of just this epidemic of homicides. So it's a bad situation. And it's obvious that Noboa, initially people were hoping that maybe he's right wing, but hopefully just be a little rational. And maybe he gave some signals, like maybe he was going to be a little more, at least a competent right winger. You know what I mean? But obviously that's just blown smithereens. He's now looking like one of the dumbest presidents ever. And
Well, with all of this violence, everybody looks to El Salvador and says, well, what Bukele has done there. And do you want to describe what that means and if that is a model that Ecuadorians would like to follow?
Well, that gets a lot of press. But what's frustrating to me is that Correa had this unprecedented, extremely successful 10 years in office where he reduced the homicide rate by 2/3. He did not have mass incarceration. He did not have the death penalty. He just had a whole myriad of successful common sense policies. He had stringent controls on who could become police. He subjected them to polygraph tests. They played close attention to the financial aspect of the organized crime, clamping down, financial regulation. They provided incentives to urban youth who, if they renounced crime, their gangs could be legalized, but as like cultural groups, but not as long as they renounced criminal activity. So they had just there was some general poverty reduction and public works, and that which gave people also options. Poverty was reduced to like 40% while he was in office. So that also takes away like the cannon fodder from organized crime. You know, the cannon fodder for organized crime is poor people, right? They can get them to do their dirty work, right? They're desperate enough for money. So you reduce poverty. That also helps take that away. So all sorts of things they did that were extremely successful. Didn't involve any, like, you know, crackdown on civil rights, didn't involve mass incarceration, any of that garbage. But the, you know, internationally, the, as soon as a right winger does some brutal stuff, people say, oh, wow, you know, look at this guy. And now, to be fair, now Bukele, there has been a dramatic reduction in homicide rates under Bukele, but there was also a drastic reduction before he came to office. It was very falling fast too. So, but no doubt that's what people look to. And, they already had successful policies in Ecuador that brought about tremendous improvement in the crime situation. So, it's frustrating that isn't acknowledged a lot of times in the reporting on Ecuador.
Well, the last I see about Jorge Glass is that he is stabilized in hospital and returned to prison. Mm-hmm. Is there a course of action with what Mexico is doing and with, as you say, the disappearance of the president suddenly that could result in the release of Glass and allowing him to transit?
I hope so. It's been publicly suggested, people are saying in Ecuador, like one commentator said, I hope as part of their international ICJ, International Court of Justice lawsuit, I hope that one of the remedies is, okay, you have to give Glass, like, he has asylum, you illegally snatched him, now you hopefully the court, they would ask the court to order them to release Glass to Mexico where he can enjoy his asylum.
Well, just before, I think it was the day before, the police moved in on the embassy, Mexican President AMLO, he made some comments about the legitimacy of the mm-hmm. Noboa government. Do you think that might have had something to do with this rash action?
Possibly. I mean, I think he might have. I don't know. I haven't looked at the exact quote, and I wouldn't trust the media to get his quote exactly right. But it's possible AMLO maybe went a little bit too far in what he said. Because you really shouldn't, as a president, comment on another president's legitimacy, right? But, you know, at the same time, Mexico has close relations with the Koreas. They've given other high profile leaders asylum, basically. Ricardo Patiño, former foreign minister of Koreas and minister of defense of Korea, he has asylum in Mexico. That was years ago that he was granted that. Same with Gabriela Rivadeneira, a very, very popular legislator who was forced to flee to a Mexican embassy. She was also given asylum. That was, again, years ago. So, Mexico is fully aware. Korea travels to Mexico frequently. You know they have the ear of AMLO's government. And, you know, they're well. Anyone who's looked into it, it's not just Mexico. Interpol has rejected a request from Ecuador to arrest Korea on human rights grounds. It just straight up told them, your case is full of shit, basically, to put it crudely. Three different times. And Belgium has given Korea asylum. So anybody at any level where they actually forced to look into this stuff knows that what Ecuador has been up to for several years. So that's just obvious.
Weird doings everywhere. Joe, thanks a lot for coming on again and bringing us up to speed a little bit with something that we don't really get much information about up here.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
And I also want to thank Laith Maruf for coming on and remind you to go to his site, freepalestine.video. Thanks again, Joe.
Good, bad, and ugly news on Guerrilla Radio at guerrilla-radio.com. That's Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every week.